we're up to, we've got the stage set for what ultimately becomes World War II. There's a lot of things going on besides what we're covering, but some of these are the things that are less or the least talked about of things in the history books, but are all readily available to anyone who wants to dig deep enough. If you want to explore how we became what we are, this was is a good place to start. We started, of course, we went to war, the United States went to war, supposedly at Pearl Harbor, but it was a little more to it than just Japanese coming across and attacking us. The Japanese had two things they didn't want to do. One of them was they didn't want to get into a war with us. Number two, they couldn't really invade us per se because when Hirohito, now the emperor, asked his generals, why don't we just invade them, allegedly. The general, in one of the generals' biography, he told them that everybody is armed. Therefore, we could never do anything there, which is an interesting aside. But let's take a look, Larry and Scott, let's take a look at Pearl Harbor. And Roosevelt had a plan. And what he was doing, he really, really, really wanted to start a war with Japan. And I don't know why he really wanted to, other than conquest, why you would want to do that, because what most people are not aware of is we had already signed a treaty, a 10-year treaty, with the Atlantic European Mutual Protection Treaty with Britain. So if they went to war, which they were already in war by the time we got involved with Japan, we had already committed our resources to them. And not only could we not afford it, we just came off a depression, if you recall. And even though we were an industrial power, floated on credit, if you're supplying everything on the Atlantic Ocean, how do you turn around and start a whole other war in the Pacific?
Right, being two theaters, yeah.
It's pretty tough. Ask the Russians. As always, I mean, ask the Germans. That's their problem. They're pinched between.
Sure.
But he had a plan. I'm going to show you. It's a very diabolical plan, and most of this information actually has been on TV recently, confirming what I'm about to tell you about a hideous thing that happened in regards to Pearl Harbor. Has been on television in those history channels.
Oh, by the way, Kirk, I actually spoke to a radioman on Midway Island that day.
Oh, did you?
And yeah, I talked. I got to talk to him. He came into a history class. He and I had a 30-minute discussion, and
really?
He told me straight up they were told they were going to be hit that day.
Well, that's what I found.
Oh yeah, well he was there. He was the radio man. I believe him.
Hey, well, listen, Army reports, the reports out there on the thing, everybody knew it. So I'm going to kind of lay this out because most people don't seem to know it. When I talk to people, they go, what? But, of course, we should all know by now.
FDR was a war criminal.
Yeah.
He was a war criminal, straight up, straight up. There were admirals, you know, they wanted to fleet out. He said, no, you stand down.
Well,
yeah. That's true.
Well, at least somebody has some backbone, but still, it's... Some of this is hard to take, but as if you've grown up knowing thinking what we thought, and then to find all this out, even late in life, is pretty rough to take. And I understand the listeners how this could affect them a little bit. But in the 30s, we had already cracked the Japanese codes. The cryptographers knew exactly what they were talking about. They kept it a very good secret. They did apparently share it with the British. Because the British had most of their Air Force, and most of their Navy also in the Pacific Theater as well, protecting Australia and their, obviously, and India and so forth and Burma. The French were, I don't know whether they told the French or not, but they were in Indochina. And then, of course, the only place that was not under control by those guys was, other than Japan and some of China, was Siam. And they had an army, a military from Portugal that was protecting them from the British and the French. But the Japanese, decided they had taken enough and they couldn't get oil and they were being treated very poorly and so forth, rightly or wrongly. But they decided that they would invade and destroy the fleet in Pearl Harbor. in Hawaii. And they sent across their cruisers and so forth, I mean cruisers and their aircraft carriers, to attack it. And we knew it was coming, and we did a couple of very strange things that I didn't know about. We took our Navy in three parts. We had a three-prong or three-wave counterattack planned for them. We knew they were coming. We were going to let them do it. Number one, that's pretty sad. We're going to let them do it, and then we sent our things out ahead of time out into the ocean. You had the Saratoga and his group in one place, the Lexington in his place, with his group in another place, and then over here, I think it was in the rear that would have served as the third wave counterattack was the Enterprise. And what happened was, if you read the records of the people, the men who were killed in Pearl Harbor when the Air Force attacked them and they didn't know they were coming, because they didn't tell, they told most of the officers and things, but I don't think they really realized most of the information I had is not, all of them didn't know this was coming, or they wouldn't have been down below in those ships, or they'd been on the decks if they really, if somebody had really told them, and they could have told them, because they certainly knew it was coming, and they were tracking them all the way across. Now they were having radio silence, remember, out there in the ocean, so they couldn't tell them. But gosh, seemed like they could have prepared them better. But what did we lose? About close to 3,000 lives there.
Yeah, it was 3,000. They're called carrier battle groups, is what they're called. But they knew they were going to be hit that day for a fact.
For a fact,
they knew it.
Yeah. If you read the rosters, all of them were young recruits, new people, young kids. All the veterans were gone, and they were kind of sitting ducks.
It was just,
and they let
sacrifice.
Them blow them away. And also, the Japanese recorded that they couldn't believe it when they got there, and they knew that they knew something was up, because they had aligned two and three deep every ship within 500 yards of each other. And the Navy that was there was all World War One. In fact, I forget the name of the aircraft carrier that was there was not even an aircraft carrier at all. It was World War One Navy ship, and they had converted it to an aircraft carrier and put some old planes on it. And they were they've never seen a harbor, a military harbor designed that way, where all they had to do was just drop bombs in a row and they could blow up the whole darn thing. I mean, that's what happened in Pearl Harbor. And then when the tragedy of it is when the Nimitz sent out there, they were primarily airplanes with torpedoes. However, they sent out a scouting party to see what was going on. And they turned back after they saw the retreat. Now, that was about at 7:30 a.m., I think the attack was at like 6:45 a.m. It's about 7:30. The Nimitz sends out his scout planes. They remember their radio silence, and they went out and saw it and wanted to come back and report that they were retreating, because I think the Japanese at that time must have known, at least the historians tell us they must have known, and they had come back to the Enterprise, and the Enterprise was so nervous. The captain and I, sorry, I don't have his name in front of me. I did at one time. He was so nervous about the planes flying back in, he didn't know which plane was which. He fired on them. What was this?
Was that Bull Halsey we're talking about?
Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah, that's exactly it. But he fired on them, and they didn't know what to do. So they flew towards Hawaii, and I was watching History Channel the other day about this very incident, and they two pilots survived. And one of them just got lucky, and the other one, he had to actually destroy a anti-aircraft group on the island so he could land, because at that time they were firing at everything they could see, because they had no leadership at all. I mean, no one to tell them anything that was going on.
Right. If it's in the air, let's knock it out of the air. We're tired of getting killed down here.
But the fact that the admiral on the Enterprise wouldn't let anybody land, I mean, he sent them out. Surely they could tell. I mean, we're just what a cowardly thing.
Yeah, but and they make heroes out of all these guys. It's just astounding to me. I told you before, one of the most despicable things was the drugs that they used. And I'm not even talking about to create pandemics. I'm talking about, you know, to where guys could fight nonstop for 2 days and they would be... they would be brave beyond belief. I mean, first the Germans did it. That's who developed methamphetamine. And then the Americans did it, and they came up with a little better one, because not only did you not have to sleep and not have to eat, but it made you brave.
Makes you very aggressive.
Yeah, so you went out there and you fought to the last man until you died. I mean, that's how they tried that stuff out. I mean, you know, they did it with British troops, is what they did over in North Africa when Rommel was, you know, kicking their butts. They sent in an entire regiment or tank regiment, whatever it was, maybe a battalion, maybe it was just a battalion, and they fought to the last guy, and they all got wiped out, and they said, yeah, this is what we're going to use. I mean, how do you like that?
How do you do that?
Yeah, every one of them dies. That's what we're going to use.
Yeah.
Lovely. I mean, that means your judgment stinks, you know.
Yeah, we got a real Nasoma problem, don't we?
Yeah.
It's an understatement in the world.
Wow. You know, and that's who's running things.
Mm.
And I think, you know, it no longer, there's nothing. I doubt if there's anything you could tell me
that would
surprise me or shock me.
I can second you, but I can't surprise you. Well, I'm going to second you now. This is...
go ahead.
Oh, by the way, that was the USS Utah. It was that fake era, that World War One thing with the top on it.
Yeah, yeah.
So if anybody's doing a little
wooden
research,
deck carrier.
They
can
find that, right? The salvage divers, all these things are stuck in the water now. It's sunk. All men on board are in there.
Mm-hmm.
For 2 weeks, the divers who went down there to examine the stuff heard Morse code knocking on the thing. I'm here, please help me.
Yep.
And they were told to ignore it because they obviously must have known something was up, and they were told to ignore it. And if you didn't, we would court-martial you and you'll be shot.
Yep. A guy's desperate down there, just, you know, in some compartment where he's got some air and he's sitting there just, you know, tapping out Morse code or whatever. Yeah, I just.
That was reported on a guy that was one of the, his father was one of the divers or something, they told him. So I can't prove a lot of that, but based on what I know so far.
No, I've heard that too. I've heard that too. Yes, I have.
I had never heard that part before, but I was. It seems vaguely familiar when I heard it.
Where it really should get people is that, you know, in these recruitment propaganda films and slogans and everything, you know, we take care of our own. We never leave anybody behind. We think as a unit. We act as a unit. And what it really is you're just being used as a bastard stepchild.
Yeah, you're
a fodder.
That
be. Yeah.
You're a total fodder.
Yeah.
I put your ambitions. It wasn't for any cause that was worthwhile. I'm not going to go through World War
Sure.
II. We know how it did, but I mean, that set us up.
It was over steel, wasn't it? About Japan and America. And I have to go back. It was mainly steel, if I'm not mistaken.
Steel, but they couldn't get oil. Remember, we supplied 95% of the oil, or 90%, anywhere from 80 to 90% of all the oil in the world.
Yeah, you said we were Saudi Arabia at the time. Yeah,
we were. Sure. Absolutely were. Now, here's one of the things that happened. We obviously signed off on treaties. I don't think the war ended quite the way everybody says. I can build a pretty good case that it was more
gentleman's agreement around the table.
Yeah, we're going to stop because there's even some information that would indicate that the Japanese may have been working on an atom bomb and et cetera. But regardless, we settled. We had troops there. But think about this from an economic standpoint. We had blown up so much of them that they're not the type of people that would really love to have an army occupying them. But the army that occupied them, when you throw in billions of dollars to rebuild your infrastructure, and they become a superpower, economic superpower, as Germany did, Japan I'm talking about, come 20 years, 25 years later, that's a strange thing you do if you went to war with somebody who you really thought was that evil. But anyway, we talked about that a minute ago.
Or making them part of the, you're also the in charge of the printing press and everything.
Economics.
Yeah, it's insane.
So that is always disturbing, that, so that's just lie on lie on lie on lie. Now, some concluding remarks, and then if we, depending on how much time we have, we'll cover some things that God said, just to give you all that, Yahweh said, just to get a head start on the next conversation we have about Samuel. But what you have as a result of the end of that war, you have surrendered, you have killed hundreds of millions of people. And you've damaged, if the count's only 100 million for World War II, which is a really conservative amount, then there's hundreds of millions of wounded, both mentally and physically. You've accomplished absolutely nothing of that I see that we supposedly started out to do. You certainly didn't defend us, and I'll tell you why in a minute. We've escalated everything and put us back to where we were. We're still fighting a Cold War, and you're still back to about the same thing we were in World War I with Europe, namely Germany and Russia would still want to go down and get the oil. We're fighting over the oil. I'll tell you why that is the case in a minute. Everybody's going nuclear. The only reason we don't need to have the pestilence by anthrax, I guess, is because we can drop enough bombs and destroy the earth and the world in such a way that what's not been bombed will have a nuclear winter, which would cause disease and death. Another
result. Or radiation. That'll
radiation.
Kill you.
Yeah.
Just over time. Sure.
Yeah, sure. So I mean, we just degenerated into a cesspool, you know. And there was an interesting article in Time magazine in 2010, and it arrived at the labs, and I think it was Merck or one of those. They had to be given $1.2 billion to develop anthrax, and they said they had done it, and it was potential to kill a billion people per vial for an 1 ounce vial.
A billion people in a 1 ounce vial.
Potentially, I don't know how you could spread it, but they said, you know, if they could spread it around, they could kill up to a billion.
Well,
people.
I believe one of the seven problems in the 7 year tribulation is pestilence.
That's what started the whole discussion with me, the whole research thing with me, now here's an interesting story. At the end of the war, we have used up. We being the United States, we have used up 95% of all our oil reserves. There was a meeting on the USS Nimitz between a guy named Roosevelt, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and with a guy who calls himself King Fossil of Saudi Arabia. I think it was the first one. Well, he may not have Fossil, but it was that family, the Saud, House of Saud. And he comes on board, and he is saluted, and they sign an agreement that they will buy dollars. They will buy oil only with dollars. Thus, the birth of the petrodollar took place there. And concluding things he did is he brought them a whole bunch of sheep. Now, you know what the sheep were for?
I have no
idea. They weren't for eating, but they were for the sailors.
It
was a tremendous insult, but the historians say that Roosevelt thanked him very much, accepted the kind gift, and had the men salute him as he took off.
You know, one of the ingenious things they did to solidify the dollar, too, after World War II, mm-hmm. and I forget exactly who came up with it. I read it some years back, was that they took all the currencies and they actually used the U.S. dollar as the benchmark for trading all over the world.
Yeah.
You know, so that was the petrodollar, as you're calling it, or whatever.
Yeah. Well, it just has to be based on something if you give up the gold standard and so forth. But
yeah,
the interesting part about that was there was a point in time when we were devoid of oil, and we allied ourselves with Saudi Arabia. So when you see why are we with the Sauds, why are we so involved with the Sunni Muslims of that oil-rich nation when, and nowadays we know we have enough oil anyway.
Oh,
we've recovered.
Oh, sure.
We don't need their oil.
Yeah, and by the way, we still are. You know, I mean, we still are in bed with them. I mean,
I know, that's kind of where it started. We've always sought out to ease the oil there, but my gosh, this is just horrible stuff. Let's conclude. I don't know how much time we have. Maybe about 10 minutes. Can I ask? 10 minutes. Let's go over, Larry, you and I will go over. I've got kind of a rough 10 statements in Samuel, 1 Samuel 8, when if you want a king, here's the terms and conditions that we said in the Mitzvah of the king. And he says, the first one I wrote on my list was, I'm going to take your sons. He'll take your sons unto him to be soldiers, horsemen, charioteers, i.e. an army, and they will go into battle. He'll appoint officers and captains, commissioned officers, over you, because they will get rewarded, you know, and they will make war machines. He'll take your daughters. They'll become servants to them. He'll take your harvest, your food, and your land, your paycheck, and he'll give it to the army. He'll take 10% for his officers. You pay them off. Your transportation, your animals, your means of plowing your fields. He's also going to take, Yahweh says, he's talking to Shaul here as an example, a metaphor for all kings. He'll take 10% of your sheep and your servants. You will serve him. And Yahweh, he said, will not hear. I, Yahweh, I will not hear you, for you have chosen him. Well, that's pretty much the program there as far as
that's pretty much where we're at, isn't it?
Yeah.
A world of people that don't listen to Yahweh at all. They don't even know his name. They don't even care to know his name.
Right.
You've got people that claim to base some large amount of their life on dedicated to knowing God and his truth and his word. And you start showing them extant words and how they don't match with what's in their book named after the sun goddess, Biblias. And you show them this and they go, I refuse to look at this. I'm stupid. I'm blissfully stupid. I'm blissfully unaware. And I'm going to maintain that. And you're a jerk for showing me.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we get, basically.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we're in a world where billions of people are going to die over the next 15 years,
mm-hmm.
right?
Oh, yeah.
That's going to happen. There's going to be no question about it. What's that?
I say, yeah, it's no way to slow this down from happening.
No, I don't care to slow it down. I don't.
Yeah.
I care to share Yahweh's words with people who really want to listen. And then that's it. You know, I'm not going to drag anybody kicking and screaming out of Babylon. I'd be outside the Torah if I did that. You know.
Well, that was my only reservation to, you know, on doing a program like this, even though it wasn't to titillate your ears or anything, or it was to, but you expose these things, but if it's not an alternative, then why do it? You know, I'm not, I don't shout, you know, the sky.
No, I mean,
there's no escape. I mean, there is an escape, and that's, as you all know, he's told you how he could save you, just like he told Noah and his family, his son's families, how he would save them. And it does no good to recognize how bad something is. I mean, it certainly does. You can try to get away temporarily. But if there's not an alternative,
there's a lot of people on FB that are constantly exposing the NWO, and you know the stuff they're putting out is verifiable,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's true. But you know, most of them, what their answer is?
What's that?
Most of them, their answer is to vote some other guy in.
And that's another king.
Well, you know, here's the truth of it. The people that will kill 40 million people, okay, to gain something, you know, to improve their position on the world stage or whatever it is they're doing, enrich themselves, whatever. People who will do that, I've got news for America and the rest of the world too. If voting mattered, they wouldn't allow you to do it. Mm-hmm. In other words, they're not going to leave it up to Scott and Larry and Craig and Kirk as to whether or not they get to maintain their trillions of dollars and their private armies.
Right.
You know, that's not how things work.
Yeah.
But if voting mattered, it wouldn't be allowed. That's a famous quote from Mark Twain, I think.
Yeah. My wife uses that a lot. If it mattered, they wouldn't let you do it.
Well, yeah. And you know that's true. And now, for the people that were listening to this show, they understand that these great American heroes have killed tens of millions of people intentionally.
Well,
our own people intentionally.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They care for no life at all. They only care for their power and their position. The good thing is for those that may. They want to know what's how to avoid that and why is I like that Craig is going to do the simulate and death because the beauty of the Torah to me as I've been able to study for the last 8 years is that it's provable, it's verifiable, you can check it. I don't speak a lot of foreign language, but I can certainly I don't speak any foreign language other than Southern. And I can, build a library with lexicons and dictionaries and all, and I can check every word and every source. And with a computer nowadays, you can even have more, and you can absolutely verify that this is the words that Yahweh spoke. And I'm really excited that next week he's going to do that with Samuel 8, and I'm looking forward to. Being part of that because not only does that prove what's wrong, but it points us in the right direction back to the Bereth covenant.
I'm glad, and that is the answer. It's go to the only straight game in town.
Right.
And the Torah does prove itself. You know, where people, you know, words mean things. You know, flat out, words mean things. And when I hear people, they have Yahweh's name, and then they're going, my faith in Yahweh. You know, faith in and of itself is a pagan concept. You were talking about how the Torah proves itself. Absolutely. There's no question about it.
Yes.
You know, Yahweh says his children are separated not for lack of the pagan notion of faith, taken, by the way, from the Roman goddess Bitus of loyalty. That's where they... But it's from lack of knowledge. And the truth is that Abraham did not walk out of Babylon because he had faith or belief in that there was a God. It's because he had come to know Yahweh and he came to trust and rely on him. So when you see that word faith in your religious material, it's a religious notion. It's no good. It doesn't count. It's trust and rely out of knowledge on Yahweh. That would probably be a better way to, out of knowledge. And knowledge comes from knowing, not from guessing or believing because somebody told you something.
Yeah.
Or hoping.
You tell me, it's straight out, it's verifiable. Everything in the Torah is verifiable. We've learned that like last week with Roy and all the scientific approach to Genesis. That was just fascinating to me. I like Roy's mind.
Oh, I do too. I mean, I listen to him. Ever since we got into the relativity, and then we know how time rolls out, and we can show that's how the fossil record shows up, and each of those. But I guess the best way to put it is epochs of time.
Mm-hmm.
Go talk to an odds maker and see what the odds on that are.
Yeah, impossible. You can't count that, huh?
Yeah. Right. And so, you know, when we sit down and we look at things like relativity or we look at random chance, you know, I pointed out one time, you know, I trained bodybuilders, way back, I always wondered, why is everything L every amino acid, you know, is L-arginine or L-orthanine, you know. And what it really comes down to is if you look into a microscope, it will look like it's turning to the left, counterclockwise. Now, what if you had something right-handed, you know, some amino acid that was right-handed, that a tree is an example. I mean, there's tens of thousands of different kinds of trees. You know, if it was a random chance, one of them would have that right hand.
Well, I see our time's come up, but I've enjoyed it immensely.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Subjects, but when y'all. So I see you next time, okay?